So over the last few years, we've certainly had a real revival in Italian film. I think in particular, you know, the films of Paolo Sorrentino, The Great Beauty, Gio Franco's Rossi's Unorthodox, but very moving documentary For It See. Do you think part of the reason for the, you know, the success of Italian film is just a sort of celebration of the sort of idiosyncratic? Because it always
seems I think Italian films tend to be, at the moment, you're really trying to engage with the problematic part of the world that you know, Italy occupies. And I guess that's always been part of the interest of Italian cinema, at least post-war. It's been a sort of country in flux, and it continues to be sort of a country, I think, at the centre of a lot of sort of tensions, I suppose, you know, geopolitically. So, you know, something like Fire at Sea is a great example. It's a film about, you know, the migration sort of crisis that's confronting Italy at the moment. But if you look at some of the films that are showing at the Italian Film Festival, you know, whether or not they succeed, and that's another sort of critical issue, I suppose, but so many of them are trying to engage with issues like migration and the crisis of work and unemployment or underemployment, poverty. And I think that's, I don't know, what seems to be the motor driving it at the moment. I mean, it kind of always has been driving Italian cinema, that sort of sense of the social ills of Italy and so forth, putting on the big screen. In some ways, I think that, you know, perhaps they sort of lost their way in a couple of those decades, sort of after the 80s and 90s, a little bit. There certainly seems to be a renewed desire to sort of tell stories and try and engage in some way with social ills.
Well, we often see, and it's just a film, is sort of Italian film known for its flamboyance. It's also, as I said, in this year's programs particularly, there's a lot of gritty social dramas.
Yeah, it seems to be a sort of strength this year.
And what's also going to be positive is also that there's a lot of first-time and second feature directors. So I think that this program is really ushering in the next generation of Italian filmmakers we're going to see.
Yeah, that seems to be the case. I mean, or people sort of doing their sort of second film or third film. There's a couple of interesting films in the sort of competition area where that I've sort of been having a look at, where we've got sort of younger filmmakers. There's a debut feature called Pure Hearts, which I quite liked, which is a strange story about this sort of blue-collar guy who very underemployed. His parents are about to get kicked out of their sort of flat in Rome. It's set in Rome, and he is basically the guard, a security guard, basically, open-air parking lot. Mm-hmm. And the parking lot is next door to a Roma
settlement.
Yeah, Roma settlement. And, you know, in some ways is a little bit of a sort of heavy-handed metaphor, but I think it's handled quite well. And he falls in love with this young girl from a sort of similar background who happens to be part of a evangelical Christian sort of movement. Just interesting in terms of the elements it's bringing to play, and quite well performed, I think, from the two younger actors there. But it sort of reflects something that's happening in a lot of the films, especially in the competition section, where we've got films set in, you know, working class neighbourhoods, and films that sort of where dialect is spoken as opposed to standard Italian, or at least an Italian that's very sort of working class,
so
and very
the working class vernacular,
and all of that. So and migrant characters and so forth. I mean, I'd like to see more films actually about the migrant experience in particular. In these films, a lot of the migrant experience is kind of on the periphery a little bit. But nevertheless, I think they're trying to sort of capture something real and capture something authentic about life at the moment that gets beyond maybe the glitz of sort of a lot of Italian, maybe variety TV and that sort of stuff.
Another film that really piqued my interest, which meant to have similarities with Ken Loach or even early Michael Lee, is a film called I Was a Dreamer.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. It's a first-time director, and he found this you know, real-life sort of character from a kind of housing estate in Rome, an ex-con, basically, freshly out of jail, who was elected to this sort of position of a kind of sort of representative of the people living in on the estate, and he went about trying to sort of rehabilitate some of the local drug dealers and so forth. Basically, you know, organize various community initiatives. I don't think it's completely successful in what it sets out to do, but it is an interesting film. It's called I Was a Dreamer. And it's certainly, again, this another Roman film, by the way, another slice of life from the sort of peripheries of Rome. So you're sort of seeing an echo of Pasolini almost in this sort of work, you know. You're sort of seeing these Roman suburbs, which kind of still look the same. I mean, even though they're sort of shot on digital video now and they, you know, the aesthetic's slightly different, or at least the technology is slightly different. In fact, the aesthetic kind of in some ways does owe a lot to, you know, early Pasolini, whatever. But, you know, a lot hasn't changed. And that's maybe a little bit depressing, but also, you know, kind of nice in some ways at a purely cinematic level. Those kind of wonderful, bizarre suburban vistas are kind of still there.
Yeah. One of the most anticipated films is a film by Eduardo De Angelis, now Indivisible. I've also had the privilege of seeing this film. This is about an 18-year-old conjoined twin singers who are sort of manipulated by their parents. It really is a bizarre, very unsettling. It had sort of reminiscence of Tom Browning's The Freaks. And
Because they are, there's so much wrapped up in who they are, Indivisible. I mean, you know, they are a freak show on one level.
Yes.
But they also do become... They have some kind of, there's a sort of religious aspect to their story where they're sort of seen as, like a lot of people who are, you know, have a diverse kind of look about them in a lot of traditional societies, they were either seen as kind of cursed or as bringers of good luck. And so that's an element of the story. It's set in a very, very poor, almost appears war-torn hinterland around the Naples region. Again, of all the films, it's probably the one with the thickest dialect, I think. And yeah, they've got these parents who don't really look much like parents. They're sort of young to be parents, but they've already lived hard lives, it looks like. You know, the mothers, they seem to be sort of almost ex-junkies. But these girls are sort of these, conjoined twins who have these faces of angels, really. But it's there, it's a story that is, and voices of angels, of course, as well, because they sing and they're taken to weddings and they have these gigs where they sing these poppy songs and stuff. But it's a story of their
that
rebellion.
Sort of singing sort of ties into sort of religious rituals too.
A certain point of the film as well. There's a priest figure in this film and there's a ceremony towards the end of the film, which is part of the climax. But their rebellion against their parents is interesting because, more broadly speaking, it's this film about Italian fathers and Italian patriarchy in general and the sort of over... You know, a lot of films are about the mother, but this is in particular, I think, a film about fathers and the overbearing... pressure of Italian fathers within society or father figures. So you've got the priest and the father, and at a certain point you've got this pimp kind of character that comes in as well. So I'm not sure that any of the films are masterpieces this year. They're sort of all really interesting and sort of mixed in terms of results. I don't know what you thought, but
so I think this is a sort of film that you're going to remember when the lights dim down. So
this, that's true.
It's certainly, there's some really unsettling moments in it that really
It does go there, doesn't it? I mean, they're attractive twins, young women, probably 17, 18, and goes everywhere you sort of expect it to go, including, you know, some very cringe-inducing moments, really, and moments where you sort of want to look away, really. But, yeah, another sort of fascinating... People might sort of see these films as being quite bleak, but in a way, I think Italian cinema of this type, but not just Italian cinema, I suppose, has that way of finding... the sort of sublime amongst the trash. So it's I think it's worth seeing. I mean, they're all sort of made well, I think.
That camera work in that film was fantastic too. Just this, it really had a real claustrophobic feel, even in the quite outdoor shots.
Absolutely.
Really tight.
And it's just these places, these towns by the seaside. I mean, these should be beautiful sort of seaside locations, but they're just built with the most basic materials, though, aren't they? They look like real slum. But another film beautifully shot is Sicilian Ghost Story. It's probably the most beautifully shot film, shot by Luca Bigazzi, who's worked with all of the best Italian directors currently, including Sorrentino. And that's a very chilling story. Again,
So this is like a mix of like fairy tale and an actual story of a 13-year-old boy who was kidnapped because his father was a mafia informer. Is that correct?
Yeah, he was a mafia informer. The kid was kidnapped in order to sort of, you know, put pressure on the father to stop him informing. But the real life story is, and it's not really a spoiler because we sort of, it's intimated in the film from early on, but he was killed by the mafia because the father didn't do what was asked of him, I guess. And the body was sort of dumped in a barrel of acid is the normal sort of mafia practice and all of that. But this is the story about, it's a fictionalized account of a sort of romance, a kind of innocent romance that happens between the boy and a local girl before he's kidnapped by the mafia. And it's got a really uneasy, very woozy feel to it, this film, aided by Luca Bigazzi's cinematography, which is just beautiful and fluid and makes the sort of landscapes, this part of Sicily, just seem fairy tale like, but also very menacing. It's quite a beautiful film. And that whole lens of innocence, where the film's really about this young girl's yearning for this boy that she was infatuated by or really taken by, that yearning for him is really evocative in the film. And it's a very odd way of then telling a story about the mafia and about a world that is completely, where innocence is completely absent. You know, it's about a completely cynical world. And that kind of mix is a very sort of woozy one, I find. And it's, in some ways, a little bit of a difficult watch, but it's a very beautifully made film. Yeah, it's called Sicilian Ghost Story. Did I mention that?
Yeah, that's right, Sicilian Ghost Story. And there's also another one about the Mafia, which is more a comedy.
Oh, you're talking about the comedy At War for Love?
Yeah, War for Love, that's it. Yeah,
with the Lucky Luciano story. Kind of, yeah, sort of one of those broad Italian comedies. They're not a favourite of mine. But again, it's a very honest kind of look at recent Italian history. They're kind of quite honest about the things that happened, especially in World War II and towards the end of World War II, when the Americans and the new Italian government had a lot to do with, at the very least, creating the circumstances within which the Mafia could thrive once again.
Also, an actor, Tony Sevilla, now famed for his portrayals of Italian politicians, he's going to play Berlusconi in Paolo Sorrentino's next film, which will be really exciting. He's apparently in a comedy called Let Yourself Go.
Yeah, which is the opening night. I haven't seen this, so who knows what it's like. It'll be really interesting to see. I mean, he's been such a really great chameleon.
Yeah.
And to see him play Berlusconi will be fascinating. Also, of course, he played Andreotti, and he was really good in that. Deeper, I think that's probably the best film. From Sorrentino, actually, and not only that film's probably, it's my favourite film of his, because it kind of, you know, for lots of reasons, but it kind of avoids some of the more saccharine tendencies that Sorrentino has. Yeah. But I think The Young Pope was also, if we're calling that a film as well, that TV series that was on SBS, I think that was also his best work, The Devo and The Young Pope, and that Jude Law was fantastic in that. But yeah, to see him teaming up with Sevilla and seeing him doing Berlusconi would just be fantastic, surely. We hope. We live in hope because sometimes, as I say, it's a bit touch and go for me.
It's always really difficult to have a sort of film adaptation of a contemporary. It takes quite a few years to sort of permeate into a structure to be able to really, you know, without being polemical.
Yeah, that's true. But I guess Berlusconi's kind of, although he's still very much active on the political scene, he's sort of stepped back from that period where he was really in his glory days and. Maybe there's enough distance for it. And certainly you'd want a director who can head into more surreal dimensions or at least dreamlike dimensions with him. Because I think if you were trying to do something just straight, maybe it would work. But I kind of think of the Chilean director, Pablo Larraín. You know.
With Neruda and...
I mean, he's the sort of director who does that kind of thing really well, looking at real life people,
mythic dimension
and creating,
of too.
Adding that mythic dimension to it, recounting their story and looking at these real life historical figures, you know, via this lens that is mythic and there's elements of fairy tale and all of that. Sorrentino, I don't think is as good as Larraín in some ways, he's up there, but I think Larraín's been more consistent. I think he's made more films that are consistently good than Sorrentino, who's, as I say, probably made two or three that I like. Yeah, as opposed to what Larraín's made it, you know, at least half a
dozen. Dealing with the mythic, I mean, it's quite incredible that such a long time since Roberto Benigni's Life is Beautiful now. And this is getting filmed, shown in the closing.
Yeah, I noticed that. I wonder how that will... I don't think I'm going to get to see that, but I wonder how that will hold up.
Yeah, I'm also just fascinated. Is this a film that has a timeless quality or is it a film of its moment that...
Yeah, I don't recall at the time him talking about that famous sort of Jerry Lewis passion project that was, you know, Jerry Lewis... famously was supposed to wanted to make a film about a clown in a concentration camp and got some way to making it and then decided it would never see the light of day. But I'd love to go back and read interviews with Benigni and see if there was a link. There must have been a link to that project, or that project in some way must have been on his mind when he made Life is Beautiful. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see how that holds up. Benigni hasn't really gone on to great success in the English-speaking world. Pinocchio didn't. So, which is interesting. Very much the flavour of the month for a while.